Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Welcome to the show, 908 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. Thanks for being here. Appreciate you turning on the dial to, 92.5, 106.1, 890 AM. Maybe you're online listening on 890kdxu.com, or maybe you have the app like me and you just click a couple of buttons there and you're listening live. It's pretty cool. I'm Andy Griffin. This is the Andy Griffin Show. It's been an interesting morning because those of you who have listened for a good portion of the morning know that we've been training Mello on running the whole morning show, not just this hour, but all you know, we do news and stuff all morning long. And it's an interesting project because it is not easy. Those who have been in the studio with me know what I'm talking about. I've got two keyboards, two mouses, two monitors, a mixing board with three different microphones and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different what they call pots in the business, volume level button things. And yeah, it's you forget how specialized a skill it is. And I'm not going to right now. I'm going to tell you I'm not a genius at it. I didn't pick it up the first day I looked at it. It's taken time and practice. And anyway, Mello was doing a good job of learning it, but it is a lot to digest in a short amount of time. She's actually been sitting in with me in the morning show all week long, and today we let her kind of take over the reins a little bit for some of it, and there were mixed results. Some of it was really good. Others of it she needed to work on, but you know what? We're getting there. So, and the reason that Mello is training on the board is I am going on vacation next week. I'm going to be gone next Monday through Monday. So, Monday, I think it's August 2nd, and then through the 11th of Monday. So it's technically 9 days, although there are only 6 shows. I will be gone. My wife and I are going away, a little anniversary trip. Just the two of us. We're pretty excited about that. And I highly recommend it, by the way, if you haven't gone somewhere with your sweetheart. Yeah, get in the car, get on a plane, whatever, and get away. All right, let's play a little game. I don't know if it's a game or not, but let's play a little deal here where I'm going to describe someone and see if you can guess who it is. Now, before we do that, this is someone who is admirable, somebody who we look up to. So I want you to maybe think about the person that you look up to the most in this world. I'm talking about maybe not someone dead, someone living or that has lived recently that, because everybody could say Jesus Christ, right? Or everybody could say, Martin Luther King, or some of those, but just somebody that maybe you personally are related with. Maybe a lot of us, it's our dad. Some of us, it's our mom, or maybe a brother or an uncle or a church ecclesiastical leader, somebody that you really look up to, you admire, and you go, man, that guy has got it all going on. I want to be like them. That's pretty cool. Okay. Think about the attributes. Why do you think that about them? What is it about them that you go, yeah, I like that? What's the couple of things that you cognitively can say, this and this and this they do, and I like those three things. And I guess the ultimate goal, as I described this person, that we all knew, maybe not personally, but we all know of, is to maybe those qualities that you admire, maybe try to adopt some of those. Adopt and adapt, right? All right, so this person is someone who was a leader, one of the leaders of our young country back when it was newly formed. They had, these are some of the attributes outlined in a biography about this person. Number one, this person who wasn't a member of Congress didn't say much. You say, wait a minute, what? No, they didn't talk a lot, right? But they did speak enough occasionally that what they said, because they didn't speak that often, it had more impact. It was more significant. In a biography about this person, it says this person seldom spoke in Congress. But when they did speak, his words contained such wisdom that they flew by the next post to every part of the kingdom. In other words, what he said mattered. What he said was important. He only spoke up when he felt like he had something important to add to the conversation. And if you think about that, that's a hard thing. In today's world of, you know, comment on everything, you know, you got your social media, you got your podcast, you got all this stuff, and of course you're going to speak up all the time. But in speaking up all the time, you kind of, your words lose their impact, their significance. Your words go out the window a little bit if you're using them all the time. How many times have we said, when someone says something, oh, here they go again, right? But if someone never says anything and then they speak up, don't you maybe pay a little more attention? Like, hey, look who's talking, right? Not the movie. Look who's talking and what are they saying? Because if they're speaking, there must be something important going on. So that was one of the attributes. This person did not yak all the time. Attribute number two, this person worked hard. It was said about this man, he was useful in committees in which he was punctual and, I like this word, indefatigable. That's just a fancy word for he worked hard and didn't seem like he ever got tired. Indefatigable. In other words, he was willing to do the hard behind-the-scenes work of which no one took much notice. Given the complaints about the current workforce, those of us who show up on time, persevere until the work is done, and act as a team player will stand out just as much as this man did in his time. Are you known as someone who works hard, as someone who gets after it? Right? So attribute number one, admirable attribute number one, don't talk too much. Don't comment on every little thing. You ever had a conversation with someone and all you're doing is waiting to get your turn at talking? That happens, right? So don't speak unless you got something important to say. Number two, work very hard. And number three, so it's termed as didn't hold his finger to the wind. Now, what does that mean? You golfers know what I'm talking about. If you lick your thumb or finger and put it up in the air, you're trying to test where the wind is blowing, right? Maybe you pluck a couple of pieces of grass and throw it in the air to see which way the wind is blowing as you try to gauge your shot in golf. Well, it's the same thing in the world and in politics. If you try to gauge the way politics are going, then you are, well, you're basically putting your finger to the wind. But this person and people that we admire, they have convictions that it doesn't matter what the political climate is. It doesn't matter what your liberal friend from California thinks. None of that matters. All that matters is you have convictions. You believe this way and that will not change. That's conviction. This man declared himself in favor of independence early on with our country. Right? He didn't say, we should be independent, but I still love the king. Or we should be independent, but, you know, we do need some financial aid from France or England. No, he said, we need to be an independent. We need to be united in America. All right. And number four, along with all this other stuff, he didn't talk too much. He worked his butt off. He didn't hold his finger to the wind, so to speak. He didn't go after every whim of political climate. Finally, and maybe this is tied to the conviction thing, he thought deep thoughts. In other words, he was, and I don't mean sit there and go, but I mean really think things through. Believe what you believe, and based on those beliefs, pattern your behavior and what you say based on what you think. I like it. Basically, this guy took the time to study, draw on the thoughts of those who had gone before, and to weigh the evidence of those arguments when forming his own opinions. Now, you're ready for me to tell you who this was? I'm talking about Benjamin Franklin. You may have heard Benjamin Franklin was talkative. Nope, he was not. He was actually a pretty quiet guy who only spoke when he felt like he had something important to say. You probably knew Ben Franklin was a hard worker. He was. He was maybe the hardest worker of his time. And this is in a time of our country where pretty much everybody was a farmer, right? And nobody works harder than farmers. Benjamin Franklin worked hard. Ben Franklin was convicted. He believed what he believed, and it didn't matter what King George said or, you know, the Napoleon or whoever. He believed what he believed. That's conviction. And then, kind of to back that up, he thought deeply about these things. The question is now, would we do the same? That person that you admire, maybe you're thinking of your dad or whoever it is, that person you admire, do they have these attributes? Are these the people who you admire them because they think deeply, because they're convicted, because they don't talk too much, because they don't sway to every political thought out there? I hope so. I try to, as I was reading through these, I'm like, yeah, I try to do that. Now, the first one, don't talk too much. I'm paid to talk on the radio. But I hope that when I speak, that it has some impact. I try to work hard. I do not bow my beliefs to the latest political climate. I think a lot of people in Southern Utah are that way, right? We believe what we believe. And, you know, you can tear down statues and you can, you know, put your flags up or whatever. I'm still going to believe what I believe. And then I'm going to, I think deeply about things. I hope that we all do that. Why do you believe what you believe? I hope it's based on what you've come to conclude by thinking deeply, not by what you read in some website or heard on some podcast, but by what you thought about and how much that means to you. When we're done, when life is over and we're in the ground and we have a little stone marker in front of us, it used to be a thing. You would put a saying, and they called it an epitaph. They used to have a saying on your grave marker. Now, I've already had a grave marker made, thanks to a Will Ducrest and Ducrest Monument Company. And I don't have a saying on it, just some pictures and my kids' names. But it used to be a thing. You'd have an epitaph put on your grave, and whatever was on the epitaph was supposed to summarize what you believed in life. Pretty tough deal there, right? Summarize a whole man's life based on, you know, one sentence, one paragraph. But kind of a cool thing to aspire to. All right, we're about 5-6 minutes away from Jimmy Kesson. I did want to talk about this great story online about lifestyle changes and not aging too much, right? Now you say, wait a minute, I'm old, I'm going to age. Well, you don't have to, at least physically, you don't have to get older. You have an opportunity right now to carpe diem, right? Seize the day. You have an opportunity to make yourself live longer, live healthier. Now, of course, we can't control. You get cancer or you get, in my particular instance, I have back problems. Stuff happens. But you don't have to just go, it happened, I guess I'm going to wilt away and die. No, there are so many things that you can do. In fact, I found a story online talking about the things you don't have to accept being old. Yeah, you're gonna slow down. Sure, it happens. But in a recent study with findings published in Alzheimer's and in the National Institute of Aging, they did a study, 2,100 senior adults. This is in America. 2,100 senior adults were put on a regimen of exercise, good diet, Mediterranean diet, basically, you know, rice, fish, beans, etc. They used brain training. They did puzzles and things like that. And they were socially engaged. In other words, they had friends, a social network. Of these 2,100 adults, every single one of them showed improvement in their health. Every single one of them. Pretty impressive. And they saw improvement in their cognitive health, too. Now, they divided them into two groups. One of them, they were put on a strict structure. Basically, they were coached the whole time. The other group, they were told to do all these things. And then it was up to them to get it done. Both groups showed improvement. The one group showed improvement through at a marked more improvement. The one that was on in a structured situation. So even though we don't like to be told what to do, sometimes it helps if we are told what to do. So the key takeaway, again, as far as health and aging, well, there are, let's see, five of them. Number one, move regularly. You say, wait, well, come on, what? If you want your body and your mind to stay young, even over the age of 70, you got to move. Walking, stretching, resistance bands, pickleball, racquetball, basketball, whatever it is, just keep moving. A few years ago, I had a morning show on our sports station here, ESPN 97.7, and it ended at 8 o'clock, and I would hurry. I was so excited. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I would hurry as soon as I got off the air and speed on over to the St. George Rec Center and play hoops with these guys. Now, these weren't regular guys. It wasn't a bunch of, you know, 20-year-olds. These guys, the youngest guy was 55. I think that was me. And then everybody else was in their 60s or 70s. It was old school basketball. Usually we played half court because nobody wants to run on that long distance, right? Not at that age. But we got out there and we played, and it was pick and roll. It was back screens. It was hook shots. I mean, it was old school basketball. Was it high level? Were we going to set any records or, you know, was the NBA going to come calling? Absolutely not. No. But it was good, sound, fundamental, and fun basketball. And I said to myself back when I was playing with those guys, and I was probably 23 years younger than the oldest guy there, I said, I want to do what he's doing. He's 78 years old, 76, whatever he was, and he's still out here playing hoops. And his knees hurt, and his back's going to hurt later. He'll have to ice him up, whatever, but he's still out here playing. And I was like, I want to be like that guy. That's part of getting out and moving. That's number one. All right, number two, eat for your brain. What does that mean? Well, that means, you know, Twinkies and lunch meat and boxes of mac and cheese. That ain't going to get it done. If you want to live longer, live as if you're young and think as if your brain still works, you need to eat things like greens, berries, fish, whole grains. Is it fun? It can be. If you like fish, if you like berries, it can be fun. And you can have some of that other stuff. You know, you want to have a piece of cake occasionally? That's fine. Just don't make that your main diet. Keep your mind challenged was finding number three of the study. In other words, it really does help your brain if you're working puzzles, if you, you know, crosswords, word search, nonograms, et cetera, et cetera. If you can keep your brain going, it really does make a difference. Number four, stay socially connected. This is the new one, right, in recent times that scientists are finally starting to acknowledge. It's important as you age that you have friends, that you have loved ones, that you are surrounded, so you're not sitting in a house by yourself doing nothing. You need to have a social network. And I'll put my plug in for pickleball here again. You will make friends if you play pickleball. If you just show up, you can show up on any of the courts here in town, especially Little Valley, by yourself and say, hey, I want to play. And there, people will let you in. People will, oh, yeah, come on in. What's your name? Hey, let's play. Hey, where are you from? All right, how long have you been playing? Cool. That kind of stuff. Staying socially connected is important. And finally, even though this one's a little harder to do, it really is important that we monitor our own health, especially our heart health. You should be checking your oxygen content, your pulse, your temperature on a regular basis. And by regular, I mean pretty much every day. You need to keep an eye on that stuff. And if you can move and exercise where you get that heart rate up a little bit, that's good too. It's all part of feeling younger while you're getting older. KDXU News Time, it's 9:28. We're going to take a quick commercial break, put some weather on, and then Jimmy Keston will join me on the air.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. 9:32. I'm Andy. Jimmy Keston is in the chair. Usually he's on the phone, but he's actually here today. Hi, Jimmy.
Good morning, Andy.
How you doing? Everything good?
I'm blessed.
Yeah?
You're looking good.
Yeah? Well, I don't have the flowing mane of hair that you have, but Those that don't remember, Jimmy is growing his hair because he wants to be like Samson and pull the pillars down on the Philistines, right?
Well, you know, there are plenty of Philistines in our modern society that need to be tore down.
I think you're probably right, yeah. I know a couple personally, actually. But anyway, thank you for coming in. Jimmy is a pastor with Foursquare Gospel Church. Did I say that right?
Yeah, Solomon's okay. Porch.
Solomon's Porch, yeah. He is also a hospice chaplain.
I am for Dixie Home Health and Hospice.
Seems like an incredibly difficult job. We'll talk about that in a minute. But Jimmy is also, I call him my political expert. I don't know if expert is a word that we should throw around much, but that seemed like some...
You've called me all kinds of things, and I've been called way worse than expert in my life, so I really am not bothered by it.
By the way, next week I will be, just to people listening and to Jimmy, I will not be here next week. I am going on a 70 cruise, and Jimmy will be gone, next month a little bit, as he goes on his own little trip, so... You're going somewhere exciting?
We're gonna have a nice trip this year.
Nice. Yeah. Jimmy, how long have you been married now, you and Ricky?
38 years.
38.
Our anniversary is in April.
We're at 37. My anniversary falls right smack dab in the middle of football season, and we can't really celebrate because I do ball games. And so every August, we take it right before football starts. My wife and I take a trip. So this is our anniversary trip.
Outstanding. Well, happy anniversary.
Right behind you, 1 year behind
you. Absolutely. Yeah, we were married in 1988.
Us too, yeah. October of 88.
April. By 6 months, yeah.
Yeah, very cool. And we were much younger and better looking than you and I.
I wasn't better looking, but I was a lot younger.
I was better looking. Yeah. In fact, I look at pictures, man, that's a pretty good looking guy. I wonder what happened to him.
Yeah.
I see pictures.
I understand. There are pictures. There are actually pictures of me without gray hair. Hmm. Not many, though.
I was going to say, I don't recall ever knowing you without gray hair.
Oh, no, I grayed in my 30s. Rikin and I married when I was 30, and by the time I was 40, I was entirely gray, so I blame her.
It's her fault. Okay. We talked earlier today, Jimmy, about President Trump and kind of his clash with universities right now. He is going after Harvard hard, yep. And today announced he's having a conflict, and there are other schools, Columbia is one of them, but UCLA is one of them today that he's really, he's talking about, you know, doing some things to them. Now, why does President Trump not like our universities?
Well, we've got a problem in some of our major universities. Columbia has settled. I read that Harvard is close to settling. This is being done through the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice. So while we say Donald Trump is going after universities, it's actually the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice, because our universities have been violating the civil rights of an entire race of people.
So when you say violating civil rights, we immediately think, okay, they must be something with black people, right?
Well,
or Hispanic or something, right? Well,
there's a race of people who are being prevented from moving around the campus of major universities. There's a race of people who are being blockaded from entering buildings. What? There's a race of people who are being harassed and even beaten on our college campuses.
With all the wokeness and Black Lives Matter and all that stuff, I don't see how that could happen.
Unfortunately, the race of people are Jews.
Jews.
Mm. And apparently, some of our major universities, in an effort to be pro-Palestine, and oh, by the way, there is no such place as Palestine and never has been. Mm. Palestine was a name invented originally by the Romans to insult the Jews.
Really?
It was patterned after the Latin word for Philistines. And who were an extinct race that was wiped out somewhere around 1500 BC. Okay, by
a long time ago.
Yeah, and no longer exists. But they were mad at the Jews, so they used a name similar to Palestine. And Yasser Arafat picked up on that in the 1960s, really? And decided to call all these Jordanian refugees that had been shoved to the west side of the Jordan River when Israel was founded as a state in 1948, to rename them as Palestinians and claim that they are the indigenous people of the land. Unfortunately, there's a group of there's a race of people who have lived on that land since 1500 BC. That's the only country on the face of the earth that has the same language, the same race of people, the same dominant culture that it did 3,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's the only place on the planet that can say that, and it's Israel. And so, in short, our universities, within the Free Palestine movement, you know, from the river to the sea, which again is a call for the genocide of all Jewish people living in the Holy Land, and to globalize the Intifada, which has been, we've been hearing a lot of that on the campus also, mm-hmm. is a call for the worldwide genocide of the Jewish people.
I talked about this earlier with you, Jimmy. I don't understand how they could think that's okay. I mean, these are the people, these same people were, you know, Black Lives Matter, they were kneeling, we need to treat, you know, George Floyd and all that, all this stuff about, you know, their supposed rallying cry is we need to treat all people equal.
Right. But we have found that in, well, in left-leaning society, which is really what our universities are, right. Equality for the race has many exceptions. And the Jews aren't the only ones, right? Asians have been horribly discriminated against, and that went all the way to the Supreme Court, and Harvard lost because they were intentionally discriminating against Asian students who qualified to go to Harvard, but they wanted
too many.
Right. Yeah. They wanted to balance the racial makeup of the campus or some such nonsense.
Yeah.
So they were denying people who qualified strictly because of their race. And so our universities are not innocent where this is concerned, but this has been something that has really ramped up over the last year or two. President Trump is not going to tolerate that. Thank God we have a president who believes that all races should be treated equally. And just because most Jewish people tend to have light-colored, Caucasian-looking skin, they are still a unique race of people.
Yeah.
And they deserve the same equal rights as everyone else. And, of course, they have not had that for most of their existence.
It's actually, again, I'll say it again, it's unbelievable to me to think about that someone could grow up with it. I mean, they talk again and again about no hatred for anyone ever, right? Mm-hmm. If you're transsexual, I don't hate you. If you're gay, I don't hate you. If you're black, I don't hate you. That's their rallying cry. We believe in being fair to everyone, and these same people are saying, from the river to the sea, get rid of all Jews. Wait a minute, what?
Yeah, it's insane on the surface, but it's something that has been going on as long as there have been Jews. This goes all the way back to Abraham. You know, the Jewish people were set apart by God to preserve the Bible and to be the race of people that brought us the Messiah. And they did so. Being set apart means they look different. They ate different. They dressed different for much of their history. Mm-hmm. You could tell a Jewish person from a block away. They would have their head covered. They'd have long sideburns. Mm-hmm. They'd be wearing a prayer shawl that hung out under their shirt. The right. tassels hung under their shirt. An Orthodox Jew, that was how almost all Jews were. But Jewish people have been set apart. You know, most people know I grew up Jewish. I am 100% both sides of the family, all four grandparents. I am a Russian Jew whose family came here as refugees. My grandparents' generation came here as refugees out of what is currently Ukraine. And you know, we didn't dress different. We didn't eat different. My family was conservative Jews. We were into a synagogue that still did the services in Hebrew, but we dressed like everybody else. We ate like everybody else. We didn't keep kosher. I can remember as a kid growing up in school, we were still set apart. I was taken out of school for the Jewish high holidays. Mm-hmm. So every Yom Kippur the Jewish New Year, all of the special Jewish holidays, mm-hmm. I was removed from school, and I got picked on for that as a kid. And I didn't understand why, and my mother told me, son, you are Jewish. You are going to face this for the rest of your life. Never again is what we say, but never again will come again. And my grandmother, my mother, the little old gentleman in at the synagogue who still had the tattoo from the Nazi concentration camp, every one of them said, the day will come where your generation will face anti-Semitism and where the call will be to kill all Jews. It will come again, and we must be prepared to never let it happen again. Well, never again is here, and thank God my mother's not alive to see this.
Yeah, yeah. As I think about modern, I don't know if it's my generation. Is there a generation that was raised to hate Jewish people? I have zero animosity for someone who's. I don't know. I guess that's why it's so hard for me to understand it, Jimmy. Right. Because I know Jewish people; they seem just like you and I. They don't have horns sticking out of their head.
No horns, no tails. And you know, as you say that. This brings up a very important point. You said you have no honor. You don't see any difference. You know, Utah, in general, the Utah culture has been much more friendly to Jewish people. The Latter-day Saints have great honor and respect for the Old Testament and the Old Testament saints of old. Yeah. And they understand religious persecution. Because if you go, if you talk to any of our kids who served their mission in the Deep South, and somebody asked them if they had horns and tails because they were Mormon.
Oh, yeah? Or how many wives do you have?
Or how many wives do you have? Yeah. You know, I get that. And when we travel and we say we're from Utah, oh, how many wives do you have?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I can and all the rest of it. But in general, the Utah culture understands religious persecution at a level that most do not. And that's why I believe that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and the Jewish people have always gotten along very well. They've always and been very compatible because there's an understanding.
A bit of a
your when it comes to religious persecution, your history and my history has many similarities. Okay. I mean, you know, they didn't kill 6 million Mormons in a shot, but
you said something, by the way, today earlier on the morning show. There are less Jews alive today than were killed in World War II. Is that true?
No. There are less Jews alive today than were alive at the beginning of World War II.
Oh, okay.
All right, so...
So we just haven't made up...
In other words, the 6 million Jews that were killed, we haven't made up that percentage yet.
Unbelievable.
The worldwide population of Jews has not caught back up to where it was, and it's not because Jews don't have babies or anything else. It's that, you know, more than a third... of the Jews, wow. Some say more than 40% of the Jewish people on the planet were wiped out in World War II. And oh, by the way, there are people trying to rewrite and reteach the Holocaust, that the Holocaust should be taught that the Nazis killed 12 million people, which is true. The Nazis did kill 12 million people, but they are leaving out the part that a full half of them were Jewish. Because 6 million Jews were killed in the Holocaust. And besides the deniers who say the Holocaust didn't happen, that insanity, the new move is to just kind of gloss over the fact that that amount of damage was done to the population of one race of people.
Now, I've never been to one of the concentration camps in
Neither
modern times, but I hear it's very sobering.
I've seen pictures and the videos.
Yeah, I have been to the Anne Frank house where, you know, the story of Anne Frank, she had to stay, it was 3 years. She was in the annex, the fourth floor, basically, of an office building. They couldn't make noise. They couldn't be seen in the windows. Eventually, unfortunately, were discovered, or maybe somebody ratted them out or whatever. But it's hard. It's one thing, Jimmy, to discriminate, and that's bad.
Discrimination is horrible.
But then to violently discriminate, to kill, or in our modern times now, to advocate the killing of Jewish people, which happened on UCLA, happened on Columbia, it happened on the campus of Harvard University.
Harvard was saying Harvard was protecting the Hamas sympathizers who were literally preventing Jewish kids from going to class on Harvard's campus.
Yeah.
And Harvard was defending this. And that's why the Civil Rights Division has stepped in, and that's why these universities are being held to account for it.
Wow. Is there, I guess what we need to get a commercial break, and when we come back, I'm glad President Trump is going after these guys, by the way, but is there something else we can do on an individual basis? So we'll talk about that when we come back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back, 950 on KDXU. I'm going to ask Jimmy to do something. Jimmy and I kind of have this running joke about length of time. Neither one of us is really good at, well, we like to talk. We talk a lot. And
yeah, I was listening to you in the first half hour, and I was doing really good on that Ben Franklin stuff, except for the don't talk too much.
Yeah. That number one, that was you're good at the other ones, but that not talking, yeah. But I stand by it. It's important that we, when we do speak, we speak with something of import, right?
We hope.
Yeah. Something that is thought out and not just blurted out, right? Okay, so, Jimmy, I'm still, again, aghast and amazed at the way some of these people in America are calling for, well, the extermination of Jews. And it just shocks me. Now, we talked about, I'm glad President Trump is saying, no, this is not okay. But we haven't had the big social movement like Black Lives Matter and some of those things, which surprises me.
I don't think that you will. I mean,
you should. We should. But you're right. We probably won't. But okay. Short of that, then what can we do? What can I do when it comes to this kind of thing? Is being not discriminatory myself good enough, or do I need to do more?
Well, I think it's incumbent upon all of us, and our Christian foundation reminds us that God made all people, and he created all people different, right?
Yeah,
sure. The various races, the various languages, you know, all of these things, God loves the variety of life, and therefore we should also, if we love God, we should love God's, all of God's creation.
Right.
And, you know, yes, it's important that we live that out in our lives, and it's also important that we call it, that we call out prejudice, bigotry, and
Agreed.
Persecution
Agreed.
When we see it, no matter who it is against. You know, and I will tell you, you know, I'm well known for very, very conservative views. But I will tell you, attacking adults because of their sexual orientation or their lifestyle, okay, we must be kind to all people. We can be kind to all people without approving of all people.
Right.
Right? Adult people have the right to live their lives in this country as they feel they are directed to do. And we need to honor that. That doesn't mean we need to hang out with everybody, but we need to, in our life, treat everybody the same. And, if you walk through the doors of Solomon's Porch and you've got rainbow dyed hair and, you're going to be welcomed.
Right.
Just like anybody else.
Right.
We have to get past separating people by things they have no control over or things that are personal choices that don't affect my life.
You know, there's a phrase out there, and it gets used a lot amongst religious people. It's love the sinner, hate the sin, which in practice, when you look at that, okay, that's actually, I think, probably a really wise thing, but how many people actually practice that?
Well, and it's hard. You know, we'll try to use one that's a little less controversial. I don't think there's very many people that would say they're in favor of drug addiction.
Yeah.
Right? And we often point to the drug addict instead of the drugs. And the fact that we know that addiction is a medical condition. Yeah. Right? That some people cannot, once they begin to take mind-altering substances, do not have the ability to control how much they take and it affects their behavior.
Yeah.
The disease of addiction is well documented, and it doesn't matter whether it's alcohol or drugs. We have a lifetime of evidence that these are people who are sick, not bad. And yet, we often because taking drugs is still a choice.
Right.
We often fault the addict instead of the disease that they're fighting. And again, we don't behavior choices that affect other people, right, cannot be condoned.
Right.
Behavior choices that only affect you are your right.
Right. Yeah, good point. I did want to take two things before we go. We got about 5 minutes left. Number one, your job as a hospice chaplain.
Yeah.
It strikes me that I should at the very least ask, when you're, for those that don't know what that is, basically he ministers to the dying.
Right.
Basically.
So hospice is when you receive the terminal diagnosis.
Right.
And either treatment is not going to be effective, or the treatment is such that you don't want to go through it and you've decided we're not going to treat this anymore. We're going to let God decide how it goes, and we're going on hospice. It is to give you the best quality of life for whatever time you have left. Right. It provides so that these people can be in their homes instead of a facility many times, right. And it provides a nurse and an aide and a social worker and a chaplain, and I'm a hospice chaplain, and our job is to comfort the family and guide people through a terminal diagnosis.
So this is a hard question, but what is maybe the number one or two things that you hear from people who are about to pass to their next existence? What do they say? Because I hear all the time people say, well, you don't want to, you never hear anybody say, oh, I worked too long or I made too much money or whatever. You always say, I wish I'd have spent more time with my family.
It really comes down to this. In a word, it comes down to broken relationships. Mm. And what we hear more than anything is the feeling of guilt or frustration. It always comes down to broken relationships as being the number one thing that people feel distressed about as they approach their final days.
I wish I had repaired my relationship with my son, right. Or I wish I hadn't been so mean.
I wish I hadn't said that to this person. I wish I had the ability to make things right before I'm gone. And in many cases, you just can't.
Yeah.
And that's where we seek the forgiveness of our Lord and the understanding of those that we may have wronged.
My guess is your job as a hospice chaplain gives you material and gives you some stuff to talk about in your other job as a pastor.
I think there's a lot of crossover, and we're about comforting those in need. And you know, the difference as a pastor, I'm here to persuade people to the faith walk and journey that I'm on. As a chaplain, I'm there to support people on the faith journey that they are on.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a distinct difference. As a chaplain, we're there to support you in your faith walk. So I have people from all religious backgrounds that I'm able to minister to, because if I'm talking to a Latter-day Saint, I speak to them in I speak fluent LDS. And
you fetch and do, huh?
I also speak fluent Baptist. I'm pretty good on Methodist, and I'm working on Lutheran.
Okay. All right. This isn't fair, but 2 minutes. Yeah. Talk about Trump and tariffs. He is coming down hard on India right now.
Yeah, the Trump doctrine is simple. Peace through prosperity and tariffs as a means to balance the economy, as well as using it to influence decision-making. And that's the part of Trump's tariff program that has really been effective. Because when the fastest way to get someone's attention is through their pocketbook. And Trump is doing to places like India, who have been very unfair in their trade practices, and he's trying to get them to rebalance things to be more fair to American companies and American workers, because American prosperity is what matters to Donald Trump.
He said, and I quote, they have the most strenuous and obnoxious non-monetary trade barriers of any country in the world.
And he's determined to see those come down, and I would not bet against Donald Trump.
No, I would not. No, that's a guy that tends to put things in motion, and he doesn't stop until they are accomplished.
Yeah, and what he's been accomplishing is nothing short of phenomenal. With this trade agreement with the EU and with Japan coming together, I mean, this is, right now, 60% of the world's economy has been rebalanced in favor of the United States.
Wow.
In 6 months.
And remember, folks, a lot of the economy was based around trying to help the other countries instead of trying to help our country.
Correct. At the expense of American workers, at the expense of the middle class, at the expense of hardworking Americans. But that is changing under Donald Trump.
That is so good to hear. He's Jimmy Kesten. Jimmy, thanks for coming on today. It's
always a joy to be with you.
You can catch Jimmy Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 7:25 on the Andy Griffin Show in the mornings. Also, every Sunday morning, Arise and Shine at 7:05 a.m.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Jimmy. Two powerful women coming up in the next couple of days. Tomorrow, Celeste Molloy, Congresswoman, and on Friday, Mayor Michelle Randall here on the Andy Griffin Show. We'll talk to you then.